password. You can use mine to get on the internet.
I did this.
Welcome to Podigis episode 021.5, Pixar's Feedbacking Doraemon.
Try chapter 5 in X-Evolution Feedback, recorded November 5th, 2017.
Podigis is your critically nostalgic analytical tour through our own meta feedback. I'm Jeff, and Ashley's here.
I'm here.
Yes, that's...
I confirm.
Controversial hot take there. I'm here. So let's dive into the feedback. Just an explanation. This is when we're trying a new feedback format. We're trying to consolidate the best of both worlds of our older feedback segment that was just prepared at the beginning of an episode and our longer episodes. We're trying to make this short. We're going to only record for 30 minutes and just release whatever we can do in 30 minutes. So we might miss things, but we're going to try and get this condensed down so it's an easier thing to listen to and doesn't take up a bunch of time.
Shut up, Jeff. Just go.
So, first off, we're going to get into feedback about things that we've gotten. Embermoto, we just posted today that Embermoto is really cool. Dorugamon and Dorugreymon artwork, which they emailed to us way back when we were first, like, teasing and recovering and recording X-Evolution. Sorry, there's been so long since we recorded X-Evolution, since we released that episode, but their fan art's really awesome. You can check it out on our social media feeds. It's really cute. All of them are all huddled together, and it's, like, named with, like, pointillism. Anyway, we also got gift art from Vivon Tamer, whose artwork you may recognize from our Impon logo from season 3. She did artwork of Galmon listening to Sonic Mania.
Yeah.
And Podigis on a Digivice/iPod. Cause Galmon is her favorite. I think it's her favorite Digimon. And too excited to. And not, maybe not favorite Digimon Pyramid. Her handle is Vimon Tamer.
Yeah.
But Data Squad is her, Savers is her favorite season. Yeah. And I think it's her Digimon in that season. And she's excited for us to get to Data Squad. Yes, and we're also excited to get Data Squad tomorrow.
Tomorrow. So, Data Squatting.
Yeah. And so now into feedback about Try Chapter 2, Digi Noobs. In the intro said Try Chapter 5 feedback. That's not what this is.
We don't actually
No, we don't actually have Try Chapter 5 feedback. We have Try Chapter 2, Digi Noobs feedback.
Oh, cool. Even better.
So this first comment is from Kevin Bennett on YouTube. And I'm going to read some highlights from it. So this is, again, talking about Try Chapter 2, which, in case it's been a while since people have watched it, it's the one with Joe and Mimi. Anyway, here's a highlight from his comment. Because the message with Mimi here wasn't that she messed up with Togemon, or that she was a narcissist, but that with purity/sincerity, you have to accept that it won't always make you popular, and it could get you in trouble. But you cannot be pure or sincere while worrying what other people think and withholding yourself or changing yourself. That's insincere/impure. So Mimi finally realizes from Mei Mei, Palmon, and then Joe, that she's actually fine the way she is, even if it sometimes causes issues. I think it's a good reading. I don't know if we brought it up too much in the Digi Noobs episode, but one of my main frustrations with that whole, like, Mimi being pure, sincere to herself thing is I guess it didn't come up too much in Try, but it came up in regards to Zoe in Frontier, mm-hmm. in that, like, being rude and being sincere, there's a complex relationship between the two concepts. Mm-hmm. Like, you can oftentimes right away being rude with the fact that you're being sincere, but like, it's not really along the same axes. It's like, if you learn to improve yourself and understand what other people are going through, that doesn't really come at it's not mutually exclusive, I guess. Like, it doesn't come at the sacrifice of being less true to yourself. Like, I mean, that's a kind of the frustrating argument a lot of people have about like PC culture, that like, if you start quote unquote censoring yourself from jokes by like not, mm-hmm. like if you start making jokes that don't offend a ton of people, then like you're quote unquote not being true to yourself, and it's like, no, you're just becoming less of a shitty person. Like,
yeah.
So I think that's kind of the frustration that I see with that. That like, I don't think if Mimi were to learn to put herself on others, she would be actually less sincere. It would just mean that like herself as a person is changing, and everyone changes. So like, that's not like impure, insincere, but I guess kind of outside the scope of what happens in that movie.
Just like, a little bit.
I think with what happens is reading. Is fair. We also got a comment from Yoshiman400 on Reddit. He said, "Oh, bless your friends for coming back to this wild mess. It's a lot of fun listening to them and hearing you and Ashley explaining all the things from Venture and Zero Two they don't know about. I do hope that if you guys keep going with this, that they're a bit less spaced out, maybe a post-dub episode type of thing. But of course, that's providing they want to dig themselves even deeper into this." I should mention, like, one thing I feel bad about is that I think I did too much explanation.
Yeah.
I think going forward when we do, because they're still interested, CT and Gabe are interested in doing future episodes. So we want to do chapter 3, 4, 5, and someday 6, maybe. If 6 comes out, who knows? If Toei doesn't get hit by a meteor.
I feel like we could space 3, 4, and 5 to lead up to when 6 drops, and then it could just be like...
Drop like it's hot. But, Yeah, I don't... Because I feel like I feel like our listeners who know about Digimon don't really care to hear me explain things they already know. And usually when I... I always thought...
I feel like it's not fun to hear us explain it. It might be fun to hear people react to our explanation with some seed of how it's supposed to go.
Right. I feel like CT and Gabe didn't react tons to my... I would explain for, 5 minutes, and they'd be like, okay.
Okay. I can see that.
There was never, whoa, I'm so surprised by this backstory you explained.
Yeah.
CT especially was, on the nose of certain things. Mimi was exactly like this.
He's I've seen anime. I know what's up.
Fill in the dots. Yeah. The last feedback about the Diginews episode comes from Lady of Iron Wrath on Reddit. And they said, I asked my friend who has no knowledge of Digimon to watch Reunion. She told me the creators of Reunion, I guess, is the first chapter one. She told me that the creators depend on the fan base a lot, meaning the story isn't interesting enough for her. Meanwhile, I was jumping on my couch and freaking out about the Hikari and Takeru scene. I really don't need much to get excited. And yeah, I think that is
that's basically what these movies are.
you have tons of baggage, and the simplest thing is super amazing and great. And if you don't, then it's there's barely a story there.
There's barely anything to follow here.
And yet, in the end, I'm totally fooled for that, because the little things they do are things that having ingrained in us what Digimon Adventure is for 10 to 15 years, whatever. We're like, whoa, I can't believe they went in this one thing. Looking at it from, not, I don't want to say objective, but looking at it without that kind of extreme fan goggles and nostalgia is of course that'd be the logical place to go. You only assume they wouldn't go there because you know what Digimon is, or you've ingrained Digimon is, or something. But yeah, moving on to X Evolution feedback. Chris McFeely on Twitter.
Best movie.
Yeah. Chris McFeely's name you recognize because I can't remember the name of the site. He ran a Digimon Encyclopedia website that had a bunch of information back in the day when the dub was airing on TV and stuff. And his comment was, something that I always remember about this movie, having not watched it in a very, very long time, is the way we get to the end and still don't know why the villain did any of it. So it just ends with the heroes speculating about why. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's a pretty good encapsulation of what was going on with this. We have no understanding about the villains at all. I mean, the villain being Age Osso. It's basically just the Royal Knights are the villains. Oh, wait, we understand them a little bit. They've come to our side a little bit, so they're not the villains. Oh, I guess there's another villain. Okay, I guess let's just kill it. And then, I guess let's speculate on why it was there. I think it is a good thing to point out about how how bare the plot construction is in this movie. There was some follow-up also to this tweet, I think a couple others, from at the Winddragon 24 on Twitter, who I think really likes the movie. And so in reply to this Chris McFeely tweet in particular, said, villains with motives hard to understand is much greater than your everyday villains.
No.
And I disagree. Because it's not really a matter of a villain having a complex, multi-layered thing. It's just not there.
Yeah.
So a big contention with some of the other Winddragon24's comments is that this movie makes a lot more sense if you know the backstory. And I really do want to address this and add to it that when we recorded, I think Andrew in particular mentioned this makes sense if you know the backstory. And I in particular was no, there are so many different conflicting backstories because there's lore about Death X Evolution that contradicts what happens in the movie. There's lore about all the individual characters that doesn't line up with this movie. And I was there is no definitive one source of information. That apparently is not true. There is the pendulum line Digivices came with story.
Specifically about X Evolution.
No, so it came with some story, and then X Evolution is set in that story kind of. And I think that story explains some of the concepts there, needing to reset the digital world and X antibodies and Age Osso and the Royal Knights. Setting up those concepts. I've not read those things. Yeah, so Digimon Chronicle reading from Wikimon, is a storyline accompanying the 2004 Digimon V-Pet line, the Pendulum X V-Pet line. And people apparently like, people are, was originally rumored to be a full-blown manga, but it's not a manga. It is a mostly prose text printed in booklets that came with the Pendulum X V-Pets, and the booklets contain, like some of them contain like 6-page mangas, and there are like quote-unquote chapters, each one sold with a different, like there's a Pendulum X 1.0 came with one, Pendulum X 1.5 came with, so it's like you had to buy the different V-Pets to get the bits of story, and...
Wow. That is some marketing right there.
It is some bizarre marketing, and okay, so we haven't read all that stuff to know how well it, maybe it does establish these concepts in this world and do some good world building to introduce these concepts. That's possible. But I think philosophically we disagree. First of all, that's like a bizarre way to communicate a story and to like have the condition that like this movie makes sense if you have read these bunch of pamphlets from different releases of a V-Pet line. Like that's, I find that kind of absurd, actually.
That's fairly absurd.
That like anyone, like no media product should be made with that expectation. Like things are, especially animation, CGI animation or normal 2D animation and stuff, is generally made to be more accessible than video games, which I assume video games are made to be more accessible than V-Pets. And the booklets that came along with V-Pets even, like, so like the idea that
the fact that you need to buy like multiple V-Pets to get all the pamphlets is like...
And I think there's a degree to which I don't entirely feel comfortable with like people now are like, they just consume all this story online that's been like re-uploaded or, you know, like hosted. And it's like, oh yes, well, you can obviously just go to the website and read it. And therefore the movie would make sense. And I'm like, okay, but that is technically piracy, you know? And so like that borders, but it's such a weird distribution mechanism that I'm like, I don't know.
Like, I mean, I don't even disagree with it on a piracy level. It's just like, did you think that people did this when this movie came out in 2005? Like that was, there's no way all that stuff was like immediately easily accessible and people sought it out before watching the movie.
Right. And so like, yeah, I mean, I guess it's nice from a like historical like archive that we have the story in places now that you can go and read it all. We have not. I'm curious to do at some point to like go read that stuff and then watch Evolution again and see how it is, like, if it was established better there and stuff, and what it's like to go into this movie knowing exactly how things work. But, yeah, when it initial release, I don't think it would have been... But, okay, so here's the thing. From a standpoint of, like, when they're making the movie, not a smart decision, but if you go and read that stuff now and then watch the movie, is it an enjoyable movie? That's a different question. And we can't really speak to that. But I think, yeah, if it turns out that, like, X Evolution is a movie that is really enjoyable to people who are, like, hyper fans of this one V-Pet line, and nonsense to everyone else, then like I kind of think
you can make a movie product, but yeah. Like why did you do it, like I don't
yeah and I don't think this individual on Twitter like actually said this explicitly, but I think sometimes these arguments go in the direction of like person X is like when a movie comes out and it's based on a book and the movie leaves out crucial details and doesn't make sense as a standalone piece of media, and then people say it would make sense if you read the book. And they kind of implied like they're wrong for not reading the book, or a reviewer, you know, reviews a movie from a series they're not super familiar with, and the movie is made to be accessible to everyone, but they review it and they haven't read the thing. And then people in the comments and everything are like, this person was not qualified to review this. Like they're not quote unquote qualified to review this. And it's like, no, this is made to be accessible to everyone. Like it's absurd to have the condition that like people should, like there's a right way to watch it and a wrong way to watch it. And the people who like, but anyway, these comments didn't spell it out that way. But I think that's what, like, some of this discussion in other realms tends to go towards, and I want to push back on that, at least, like...
I mean, there's a book made from... Or a movie made from a book should never be nonsense. Like, it will leave out things, and you will always think the book is better, probably. But, like...
Always.
You should definitely never be like, I left this movie feeling like it didn't make any sense. Like, that's a different issue than it was not as good.
So I guess that's the thing that, like... My obvious comparison was books or movies made, books made into movies where like important details are left out and you're like, I don't understand why X happened, or like this scene, like they cut the corner here or something, cut a corner here. And that happens a lot. But this is more like nothing about this, like not nothing, but like the movie as a whole is a mess. It's such a fundamental, it's like that's to the extreme. Yeah. And that's why we,
And I would push back that, like, you know, Jeff wrote down what separates media that is good for, that requires rewatching, and media that is just obtuse for requiring.
And that's kind of like a separate question of like whether you've read the Chronicle storyline. Because I do think this movie makes more sense if you've gone through multiple times and if you've like thought about, like we did on our podcast, to break it apart and then go back and rewatch it. But yeah, what were you saying?
I don't think that it's necessarily, like, in reading this and listening to you just now, I was like, I would compare it to things that are, like, it's clearly trying to be a multimedia product. But, like, I'm basing it off of what I know of, like, the comic Check Please, which I really like. But it's supposed to be multimedia, but I only consume in one way. Like, I only read the comics.
What are the multimedia elements?
There's, like, a Twitter thing that he does where he posts, like, daily updates of the characters and stuff.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So there's all this other stuff that I, like, don't read. But, like...
But it's, like, those
should
things...
They should be able to exist on their own and make sense to somebody. Like, you can't just...
Like, those other things, they add to the experience instead of the experience being nothing without them.
Yeah, like, I can read the comic and be like, this is perfectly fine. I assume you could read the Twitter and be like, this is funny without reading the comic.
Maybe, that might not be necessary.
It might not be, like, the best in reverse, but, like, I assume it's sort of true.
In that sense, like, it almost feels like this is the accessory media product to the Chronicle storyline. This is the, this is the equivalent of the Twitter thread.
Like, if people are like, this isn't the main story, this is just, like, a part of a larger story. I'm like, I don't, what? That's, you did the multimedia product wrong then. Like,
yeah.
And, as to the rewatch question, I do not believe that anything should require you to rewatch it to fundamentally understand its story.
Right. This question I wrote down of, like, is what separates media that is good for requiring rewatches and media that is obtuse for requiring it. And I think it's that, like, when I praise things that I think are good for how much value they add on rewatch, things like that come to mind are like Serial Experiments Lane. I can't think of any examples. I know you don't like that example, but I'm failing to come up with other examples off the top of my head right now. But what I think works when those things work well, it's because you get different things on each experience. And the first time you still get something, you still have a like positive experience. You still have a good experience the first time. And then other times you get more. And I think that's very different from, like, having a very lackluster experience the first time and then an okay experience or, like, a maybe good experience on, like, the third or fourth rewatch. Because it's, like, you really... No one should expect people who dislike something the first time to keep rewatching until maybe they like it.
Admittedly, I did that, but, like...
For this
one? Yes.
Right, and I think...
But also, like, media was less
accessible. Like we talked about, I think, back then, I liked it for not making sense. I thought that made it more mature and intellectual and sophisticated.
Because it had silly views of what anything was.
And I think to some degree, it may have worked on that front, may have been intentional on that front, may have, like, the obscurity and the things not making sense may have been intentional to go for that, like, faux intellectual, like, Chunibyo-esque mentality.
Hmm.
Chunibyo is supposed to be, like, 8th grade, and I had this at, like, 11th grade. Anyway, and
we were 15, so I guess we were 10th grade. Yeah.
I watched it in 11th grade. I don't think it was that when we were 10th grade.
I don't know. What? Well, you're younger than me.
Oh, whatever. So that's basically like our kind of thoughts. Oh, I guess one other example I want to bring into is Blade Runner 2049, which recently came out and it's tons of praise. I think it worked on several levels in this front. Like, I think Blade Runner 2049 would have been an enjoyable movie, even if you hadn't seen the original Blade Runner.
I agree, actually. Like, there are some things...
We can't speak to the full extent of that because we had seen the original Blade Runner. So, like, we didn't actually have that experience, but...
I mean, I found the original Blade Runner incredibly boring compared to new Blade Runner. Right, so, like...
New one a lot better, yeah.
I think you'd be a little confused about, like, character backstory. But, like, it does a fair enough job of being, like, I have set up... Because both of them set up the basic story through a text dump in the beginning.
But I think the other level that it works really well... So Blade Runner 2049 was also a multimedia franchise in that, like, there were three tie-in movies, and I haven't seen any of them.
But I saw one of them.
Oh, you watched the anime one?
I watched the anime one.
Oh, you did? I didn't realize you watched it.
Yeah.
That one's getting a lot of hype in anime circles because it's...
Well, somebody on my hockey team sent it to me knowing that I like anime.
But yeah, it's directed by the director of Cowboy Bebop, so it's getting a lot of hype.
Yeah.
And apparently, like, so that sets up an event that happened in the interim between Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049. And it's like, knowing the details of that event aren't crucial to understanding Blade Runner 2049, but it's an extra story. And I assume watching 2049 after having seen that would give you an extra level of understanding, but not a necessary level of understanding. Like, so,
yeah, like it was fun to be like, oh yeah, that thing, that's what I just watched about the blackout.
So that's like an example of, on the far end of the spectrum, doing it right. And I feel like Exolution is on the far end of the spectrum, doing it wrong.
And it's also watching the short on its own, again, was like, this is an enjoyable experience. Even if you didn't know anything about Blade Runner, you'd be like, this is pretty. Like, I'm intrigued. Like, I want to know more.
Yeah. And I think the best example was the Twitter account for Check Please, because, like, I feel like that is something, like, reading that Twitter on its own would not be enjoyable. You'd be like, why would I read this random Twitter?
Well, I certainly think jumping in randomly, yeah, like, right. would be, like...
And, yeah, and so, but it's like, that makes sense. It makes sense to have a secondary product that, like, only makes sense with the main one. That's, like, maybe, like, our feedback episodes. Like, if you were just listening to our feedback episodes, not the main episodes, you'd be like, what is this stupid
podcast? Yeah, what is this
stupid You might think that even listening to the main episodes is like, yeah. but, yeah. If you're angry at us for not liking Exolution,
yeah.
and yeah, I think it's but so like to treat for so like the impression I have now is that Exolution was the secondary product, which makes no sense. And
yeah, that's dumb.
Like I guess I like hope that they should be the main product, and like it doesn't like strategically it doesn't make sense from a business perspective to make the main product be the pamphlets. Consumed alongside VPets. Like,
yeah. I just don't understand this business strategy.
But also, as an artistic work, I mean, I guess we're biased because the way we like to consume things is to watch the anime. We're like a podcast that covers mainly the anime. We don't really consume the other things. But I think a lot of people do that too.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess the only way this movie was much more enjoyable being like, I have just imprinted the entire Cyber Sleuth, like Yggdrasil, Royal Knights stuff on top of this movie, and to make it make sense.
Anything aside from like, yes, the Royal Knights report to Yggdrasil.
No, it informs like Yggdrasil's.
Yggdrasil makes dramatic decisions.
Yeah,
like, that involve wiping out everyone.
Yeah,
when he gets a little bit pissed at
like I don't know, man.
A little bit of a threat, wipe out everyone. And
yeah.
Anyway, so on to some more comments. Mick Ann on With the Will said, "If a group of Digimon could grow stronger and survive his mass extinction program." Theoretically, after enough cycles, the percentage of population immunity could become too large and too powerful for Yggdrasil to continue. That's probably why he decided to delete all of them. So I guess this is in regards to like my confusion, or maybe all of our confusion about like, yeah, Yggdrasil made a bunch of chosen digi children, and then a bunch of X-antibody Digimon survived too, and then for whatever reason he decided to wipe out everyone with the Royal Knights. Yeah, and I think this kind of explains that like, just the prospect of Digimon surviving that without his will would,
But then what is there to exert his will on if there are no, there's nothing living?
And also, just, like, I think the logic doesn't totally connect. And not faulting McGann, I'm saying, like, the logic that, like,
right.
I think this is what the movie was going for, I think it doesn't connect, is that, like, okay, but you could just wipe out the X antibody Digimon and get rid of that threat, and, like, I guess you could assume that, like, the chosen Digimon could someday evolve to be resistant to you, but it seems like, so like, evolution works on the concept of natural selection, right? And evolution and Digimon, obviously, totally separate concept, but I think in regards to the X antibody and everything, it is kind of working like evolution, or a real world concept of evolution, that it's like, they're adapting to survive, obviously not through generations like real evolution, but anyway, and I feel like, what is the terminology for this? Like assisted selection? Like, I think this applies in concept in places where it's like the way that we breed dogs to be more likable.
Mm-hmm.
I guess like in all contexts of breeding, like we breed animals to exhibit a certain trait and plants too. And then we like choose what to go on the next generation based on qualities or like, and then we exaggerate those things. And then we end up with dogs that like can barely breathe because we've pugs. Yeah. I guess it's totally different from genetically modifying, but kind of like, cause it's not ethically.
You're not like actually extracting something
right.
from
the genes. You're just controlling the breeding process. And that's like, Yggdrasil could do that, you know, like choose Digimon, like put them through an extinction event, whatever, whichever Digimon survive as X antibody Digimon, just kill them off. The ones that are left are the ones that can't. So he can like selectively breed them. Won't breed to find the ones that don't have the capacity for the X evolution for the X antibody, whatever. So anyway, that's
right. Cause it's like, I could see if it's like, he's so afraid of them cause he can't wipe them out. But at this point he can, because that's his whole deal is to wipe out all the Digimons. So clearly he's like, I can kill the X antibody.
But I guess he can't actually though. Cause the whole movie is that he doesn't.
It's partially that he doesn't because his Royal Knights betray him in the end.
We really need to do our gender quiz for Yggdrasil because we keep gendering him as he.
Yeah, well, I think he's a he.
Next comment was from Fatboy Slim on Podigies.com and said, Digimon eating other Digimon is much more disturbing than Pokemon eating Pokemon since they're actually sentient creatures. That's totally true.
That's fair, although thinking of a Pokemon eating a Pokemon, I'm pretty freaked out. I'm pretty...
Yeah, because, like...
I think because they're overall made to look, like, cuter, so the thought of a Pikachu, like, eating a Pikachu is... Because they wouldn't eat their own... They wouldn't eat their own thing, so it would have to be, like, a Pikachu eating a Caterpie.
You wouldn't eat a Pikachu eating Pikachu.
I don't know, man.
Oh. And I guess we should disclaim, like, Pokemon are sentient, they're just not verbal.
Yeah.
Because they have feelings, they have love, and they understand their trainer.
Yeah. They're more like pets, though.
Yeah. Diddy Billy on Pettages.com said, Omegamon was the best X-antibody, no question. Kind of pissed that they made Alphamon so much stronger than him. And I feel like, did they actually make him so much stronger than him?
I feel like Omegamon is the one that he just, like, turned, right? Like, they didn't fight.
I mean, I thought they came to, like, a standstill. My like, lingering impression, not having rewatched that part carefully recently, was that they were equally matched. And that Alphamon sacrificed himself so that Omegamon can survive, but, like, that, like, Alphamon didn't overpower Omegamon.
Also, I disagree. Wargreymon X is the best X antibody Digimon.
Yeah, I mean, Omegamon X, the Omegamon X variant, I actually really find it not, like... It felt like it was...
I don't remember what it looked like.
Oh, it looks pretty weird.
Ooh.
Because it's, like... I like Omegamon's design in CGI. Like, for all of our complaints about the CGI in the movie, like, I think that the Royal Knights actually look pretty good in CGI. But, so I like his base design, but then the X antibody just looks way too... A bit, like, over-designed. It's just, like...
Yeah.
I guess I'm just familiar and used to the level of complexity in Omegamon. Okay. It's
just a more boxy Omegamon.
Okay. I like it everywhere except the face.
Yeah.
It's the face where I'm like, oh, I don't like what you're doing there. Like, there's just too many elements. Or it's, like, too many things going on.
Too many things on your face. Too many things.
Yeah.
Oh, he has, like, a knife. Yeah.
He has a knife? It's a sword.
No. Oh, on his head.
Yeah, he has a knife head thing.
Yeah, that's dumb.
Anyway, so that, I think, is the end of our feedback. We were trying a new thing where we, you know, try to record in 30 minutes and fit in answering questions if we have time. And this time we kind of ran short because we went on for a while about, like, the nature of
nature
media.
Of how to make movies. Good.
How to make movies, like, the critical... I'm more interested in the critical experience more so than the production aspects of it.
Yeah.
But anyway, so hopefully in future episodes we'll have time to answer some questions. You can always send us questions to answer at any point. You can send it to us... Well, okay, you can send us comments about this episode to go to podigies.gmail.com.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Go to podigies.com/021.5. That's a hard URL to type, so just go to podigies.com and click the thing in the list. But you can also send us your thoughts on Podigies. You can also send your thoughts to Podigies on Twitter, Tumblr, or Facebook, or to our email address, podigies@gmail.com. And also through all those same ways, you can send us questions to address in a future Q&A segment, if we have time for a Q&A segment.
Special thanks to Jubia Manjo for our Season 4 of Goonimon artwork. And a quick shout-out to our Champion, Ultimate, and Mega supporters on Patreon. Diab Jomon, Dizzy Dizumi, Joe Keto, Kailunamon, Sam Kruwagamon, Andy Lusamon, David Graumon, and Marcus.
And if people want to follow us on social media, I am Definitely Jeff on Twitter. Ashley, where can people find you?
AshMcD00 on Twitter.
If you want to hear your manga thoughts.
If you want to hear my manga thoughts, but only the shoujo ones, it's at @shoujointel on Twitter.
And stay tuned tomorrow for our first Data Squad episode with our Data Squad expectations in episode 500. Bye! And remember, never stop visualizing.